What's up? It's your boys, Jordan and Abraham. He's a professional runner, so he's your fast friend. I'm an MD PhD student, so I'm your smart friend. But as always, we are your friends who read One Piece. Now, before we hop into the chapter this week, as always, if you're listening to us on Spotify, please take a moment to rate us 5 stars.
Five stars.
And feel free to reach out to us at our YouTube page, Friends Who Read One Piece, or on Twitter at FWROP Pod. We look forward to hearing from all of you. Now, this week we got chapter 1118 titled Being Free. And there was a whole lot going on, especially compared to a lot of the dialogue we got these past couple chapters. Jordan, what are we looking at this week?
Definitely more of an action-filled chapter, though. As you know, I love the lore drops, even though there's a lot of haters in the lore drops. Definitely action-filled. The chapter begins with the Marines freaking out as the giant robot crashes into their armada. Vegapunk's message continues amidst static. We're continuing from last week's message, which ended, "Among you, there is," and it continues, "and their name was."
I was surprised that we got more of like the dialogue. I thought the dialogue was going to cut off at the Mo section. And I'll be honest, I don't really know how this ties in to the end of 1117. Like, I've been thinking about it for a couple days. Among you, there is what, right? Could it be something like a traitor, right? Could it be some,
Oh,
oh, right? I don't know,
keep going.
right? That's well,
I'm
that's my
intrigued. I'm
point.
intrigued. I'm
Those are
intrigued.
some of the things we talked about last week, right? And their name was what? Would it be like, and their name was Rocks, or I guess whoever like the Rocks equivalent is from like the Void Century? But it's just there's so much shrouded in mystery at this point that I don't, there's no way for anyone to make an informed guess, right? It's all gonna just be random speculation. But what did you think?
Bro, we got, my guesses are always informed, bro. What do you think?
Yes.
My guesses are always
That clip
educated and
Cobra
informed, bro.
evil?
Swear to God,
Was
man.
that also an
I
informed
swear to God,
guess?
that was not. I want to be clear on this podcast. I never thought that Cobra, I never actually thought Cobra was evil. I want to be very clear about this. I just thought it was interesting and worth talking about. But I do think the idea of discussing, whether or not, like, it could be a traitor and their name was Rocks, especially as we learn that there's, as we're understand, as we begin to understand through this whole long reveal that there's a war from 800 years ago that's actually ongoing. To me, the way that has shifted my thinking about the current conflict is previously I thought about it as you have these people who are sort of like, yeah, heirs of a will, or sort of like picking up the mantle of these things that were 800 years ago. But when I think about understanding that it's still ongoing, it's like we see the giant robot having recognizing Joy Boy and talking to him. We'll talk about that a little bit more this chapter, although not too much. We see Zunisha being like, "Sorry, Joy Boy. It seems like there's someone who wronged them." I think we had talked a little bit about at some point a while back, the possibility that I think there was maybe an S-class, F-class theory that there was a that M was the traitor in Joy Boy's crew.
I remember talking about that.
And so the idea for me, like when I understand it as an ongoing war, and you see someone like Luffy awaken his devil fruit powers, like I'm always wondering now, like, how are these things actual continuations, not just people inheriting things? How are things that have really been passed down in that way? And so the idea of there being a traitor to me, that wasn't something I had
So
thought of, but I would love to explore that.
do you think it could be Emu? That is so. Here's, and the reason why I say that is we've always gotten the name Joy Boy, Joy Boy, Joy Boy throughout this year. It would feel weird at this point, let's say in another flashback, if we're like, oh yeah, there was Joy Boy and there was also like the anti-Joy Boy or whatever, you know what I mean?
Sorry, I just have to, yeah,
What's up?
that
Okay, cool. Cool.
I was like, there's among you and the D's, there's a traitor,
Yeah.
and their name is Nefertiti. What if, bro? Hey, what if, we see him out here in Marajoa looking at this. At this portrait of who we think is Queen Lili. We know that Lili was a D. we can imagine that Vivi is a D.
Wait, Lily was a D.
Lily was a D, right?
No, because none of the Nefertaris are like Vivi doesn't. I feel like if Lily was a D, then Vivi would have the D initial in her
name. Man, I'm like, do we even know how D's do D's act? Do star accents? It's just so.
I don't think D's Lily, but just because there
do
was.
Are we sure that D's actually get passed down generationally in that way?
I mean, we know there's dragon.
That sounds
yeah, wild. Monkey. Yeah, but there's also dragon.
Yeah, monkey D dragon.
And Garp and Luffy, right?
Like. That's
so I don't think she is a D.
I don't think she's a D.
But it could be that we had never. It could be that that was not something that was passed down intentionally.
Oh, I'm so sorry. She is a D.
Thank you.
Really?
Yes.
Vivi is a D.
I had no idea. Okay.
So we know that, and it, certainly in, we are led to believe that in leaving the world government, you know, she chose not to join the world government, not to join the other 20. Kings and ended up founding Alabasta or whatever she did. We don't really know if she just founded Alabasta. She might have done more. That could be an interesting possibility about who the actual traitor could be. Maybe there's some kind of, you know, hidden crazy persona passed down into Nefertari.
Let me take Vivi. Us on a really quick tangent. Because you watch First Things First, right?
I like What's Right with Nick Wright. I don't like watch First Things First that much, but I follow.
He talks about three takes that he has.
Yeah.
They're
ones
that are immediately proven correct.
Yeah.
Category twos that are eventually correct, and category threes that are immediately and horribly wrong. And the Cobra is not evil. Like the defense that I put forward in that group chat that day was 100% a category one take and a category three take by you. Cause that was like the next chapter came out and we were all immediately.
So you were going off on
him, yeah.
And he was like,
I'm just gonna put his foot in the sand. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was say, hey, double down on that again now. You 19 is gonna change. That's what I was building to. This is immediately gonna be proven incorrect.
Well, listen, I just want to let you know that this is not a take. I'm saying officially because we know some of my words get twisted and my predictions. Sometimes people may not listen as carefully to exactly what I'm saying as I feel. But I want to be very clear. I do not actually believe that we're going to find out that Vivi is a traitor. But I think it's a when you start bringing up the
I got you.
It sounds kind of interesting. It sounds kind of interesting.
Real quick, we've got Joy Boy for all of these chapters. I don't expect Oda, like 100 chapters from now when we get our next flashback about the Void Century, to be like, there was an anti-Joy Boy, by the way, right? That's kind of, to me, Rocks already fills that role and Blackbeard is going to
fill
that role.
Sure.
That's why if it's like, if we're talking about there being a traitor, someone like who opposed Joy Boy from within his own clan, it would almost make sense for it to be someone like Emu. Like maybe Emu was also a D.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's where my head is, but.
I would say that my top category most likely person to be this traitor would be Emu.
Yeah.
And that would actually be the thing that gives us Emu's real name or tells us potentially who they actually are.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it? I mean, what would be the most shocking? What would be the most shocking? What would be the most shocking?
What else happened this chapter? What else happened this chapter?
You know, maybe Emu just didn't get that Botox that the Elder Stars have, and that's why she's looking at that at the portrait of Vivi, being like, I used to look when I was young. But as the chapter continues, the giant robots continue sinking in the ocean, wondering, where did you go, Joy Boy? I wanted our paths to cross. You were here, right? Before Saint Mercury appears to Marines, who are like, WTF is that? I'll give a quick shout out to Abraham because he's been on the whole, the Marines are going to be shocked when their Elder Stars, the guys who've been running their government, are these giant, crazy, like, horse, demon, bird, skeleton things. And then we see people around the world react to Vegapunk being cut off, wondering if the world's greatest scientist has been killed before the Elder Stars ask York, how many of you survived? And besides herself, it's just Vegapunk number 5, Atlas, and number 2, Lilith. Abraham, what do you think? How is Vegapunk going to be with us through the rest of the story?
So I personally think Vegapunk's journey ends here. I actually don't. I don't expect Atlas or Lilith to continue on with the crew at this point. It feels like they know too much, right? So sure. The whole broadcast was stopped. If we then leave the island with, let's say, Atlas, right? Mm-hmm. It would be a huge plot hole for Atlas to just not be like, oh yeah, this is what Vegapunk was going to say in the rest of his report. Yeah, that was cut off, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And because I don't expect Oda to give us that revelation in that way, I think he kind of has to write off Lilith and Atlas.
I think that that makes a lot of sense. I know we were talking earlier on about the role Vegapunk was going to play and whether it's something that like Frankie and Chopper are kind of able to play that role of Vegapunk, and whether or not that was actually, I think, the last live episode we did here in St. Louis, we were talking most in depth about that.
Yeah.
I think whether or not you see that happening, I think the idea, like, I think you're right that especially with this reveal, because I think that was pre-reveal, actually. That was the one where I should have said the friggin' thing about the oceans. I had it in my notes, but then we were talking too long. But at that point, we weren't thinking about it in terms of the reveal. We were just talking about it in terms of the amount of knowledge that the different Vegapunks had,
yeah,
and saying, oh, if they have the knowledge, do the scientific thing, read, you know, whether it's like reading poem glyphs or creating different kinds of, you know, creating the ship, whatever, who has the ability to do that. But especially now that we see there's this entire reveal to be made about what's being told to the whole world,
yeah,
I think it doesn't make any sense for the Vegapunks to continue on with the Straw Hats. Although I do have to say, I think knowing Oda, if there is one of them who is more likely to continue on with the Straw Hats,
Lilith.
I'm just saying Lilith has made it this long. Lilith was the first one. She's made it this long. Like,
you just know the hentai pages are going crazy. Lilith was first dropped, and they're like, this is Dr. Vegapunk.
Lilith looks good. I'm not even going to lie to you. I think Lilith looks good. But I think it would definitely feel unfulfilling if the Vegapunks are with the Straw Hats to the rest of the story.
Can I ask you guys a quick question?
Sure.
How much information did they share?
So in my head, everything is synced up with one another, right? Like through Punk Records.
Uh-huh.
And so I would
know what, you know what, but York didn't know.
I was about to say that.
Yeah.
I was about to say, the fact that York didn't know all of the plans that Vegapunk, you know, pulled out during the Egghead Island incident, maybe he just didn't upload some of this stuff to Punk Records. And that could be Oda's explanation for that. I don't know.
What's interesting to me is what would a Vegapunk do the rest of this story? Like, I think they either all have to die.
Yeah.
Or
I think it would be like an energy thing, right? Continuing Vegapunk's goal towards building that self-sustaining.
Sure. Yeah,
energy.
That would actually be really interesting, or being able to like create something like that.
Yeah.
And then you wonder too about, to me, there's almost a really interesting question about what new, because again, it just feels, Straight with the Straw Hats feels kind of weak, especially because I still do feel like Chopper and Frankie, you know, Robin reading the Punglyph should be able to do a lot of the things that Vegapunk has done to like take on his work. But we also have another character in this arc, Stussy, who has not really demonstrated her full importance to the story. Was it like to this point, she's the first clone that we know of. Yeah. And she's getting this whole you should live story.
Yeah.
Right. But we don't have she doesn't really have an impact on the plot to this point, besides a little bit of saving the Straw Hats. And we could have learned from anyone else that there was a clone. We could have had that kind of thing. She's a vampire too. That's a whole thing. I had to go there. But it sort of makes me wonder if this could be some kind of creation of a faction. She and Kaku are clearly developing some kind of rapport and have actually traveled together. There are the Vegapunks who also have worked for the government. And, is it possible? I know we've talked a little bit. I've mentioned a little bit the possibility of Lucci even potentially being reformed. I don't know if reformed is the right term, but is it possible for there to be some kind of group that gets created between someone like Kaku, Stussy, and one of the Vegapunks that ends up coming back in the end game? Because I think those characters could come back in the end game. We would need to have some reason for them to journey.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they'd be sitting around.
Yeah. I I don't see any long-term connection from like Oda has so many characters in this series, right?
Right.
And I just don't expect that there's going to be a role for all of them in the end game, right? Now, maybe Stussy is the exception, but she's just one person that I was like, she'll be in this arc. And kind of like Koza. Koza was really important in Alabasta, and you know, he's probably not going to be relevant for the rest of the series. So I don't really expect Stussy to be all that important.
That makes sense. I'll just leave it with, I do want to remember, you know, the fact that she is the first clone we've ever seen, and the fact that she is a clone of a member of the Rocks Pirates who has a son who...
Well, maybe Weevil feels that way, because I personally think Weevil is not Whitebeard's son, but probably like a Whitebeard clone, right? Yeah. And all of that applies to him too.
It'll be interesting to see how they continue with this.
Yeah.
As we move on, Luffy, Dory, and Bragi make it back to the ship in good spirits as the Marines, particularly Vice Admirals Dahl and Bluegrass, curse out Bonnie for turning them into kids. The Straw Hats prepare to launch the Sunny into the ocean as Luffy fills up on meat to get his energy up. Mars attacks the ship, and Dory and Bragi defend it from a fire-breathing attack until Luffy's belly is full and ready to go. As he assumes his Nika form, the giants begin dancing, and Luffy tells Bonnie to come on and keep up. As she asks for a future, she's a distorted future, asks for a future when she's totally free, we get a huge full-page-ish spread with Bonnie turning into a version of Nika, white hair, cloud scarf, and all. Let's do this, Luffy says. Yeah. Bonnie says, now that's some real sibling synergy there, right there, huh, Abraham?
I don't even want to acknowledge that last sentence. I'm just going to tell you what I thought of.
Just imagine if I get to a category or two on this. Just imagine it. Just imagine it.
I would be devastated. If that was the game.
Because remember,
too, I would be absolutely devastated.
Remember, too, that would mean that the dragon snuck in there on Kuma, and I know you would hate that, too. This would have even greater significance than just our takes.
Yeah.
No, that's crazy. What'd you think of this moment?
So, my question is, what's the scope of Bonnie's powers? Why? What's stopping her from being like, give me like an ice future or like a Kizaru future where she has like, those Logia Devil Fruit abilities. Like, Nika, give me a Nika-ish. What does that even mean? Right? That doesn't really... I feel like that is just as abstract as trying to be, like, copy, like, a Whitebeard's life and his powers and his abilities, right? So, I'm really curious as to how much of Luffy's Devil Fruit Bonnie is going to be able to recreate, whether it's just going to be the appearance, or if she's actually going to have the like Toonverse powers that the Nika fruit has. Because if that's the, if it's the latter, then she has by far the most broken fruit in the world. Like, not even,
even more broken than Luffy's. I guess I wonder if it has to do with you have the ability to do these things to your body, but then she's also able to turn everyone else old and young too, mm-hmm. which feels like the kind of thing that is, I mean, that's almost like a version of being able to use Shinobu's devil fruit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is beyond just the powers of her own and her own body. So I guess,
though Shinobu's is permanent and hers is like temporary, but
actually that's a pretty fair point. So I guess to me it certainly feels just between the way, obviously we saw her get her whole giant arm before, right? And in the Nika like future,
mm-hmm.
obviously she's given the entire appearance of Nika and has the whole white hair going on. I wonder, do you think we see the giant robot reacting in this last panel? Now, obviously it could just be to Luffy also being there, but do you feel like that's an indication with that being both of them that it's reacting not just to Luffy, but that whatever kind of special energy Luffy has, Bonnie is also able to generate?
So I hope not personally, because we've spent like the whole end of Wano, right? Was all talking about, hey, Nika is the warrior of liberation. We've been waiting for 1,000 years for the return of Joy Boy, blah, 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 blah. It's almost like it's prophesized, right?
Right.
And then to just be like, oh, there's two now. because, you know, Bonnie can just copy this, but it would be so broken. Imagine, and again, my question is going to be, if she can just copy the Nika fruit in its entirety, why couldn't she copy literally every other devil fruit? So you could have her with Blackbeard's abilities, with Aokiji's ability, like...
Well, you know, I tell you, like, this is what makes me wonder when we talk about how the war has been ongoing. When we see Luffy just turn into this character as he continues to further awaken his devil fruit, this character who seems to be a god who has sort of, like, a white version of exactly what the Elder Stars have had a black version of. Not that the white version is good or better by virtue of being white. But... You know, we see him have this white version. Now we see Bonnie kind of awaken this version of it, where now she's bouncing around and dancing and it has this kind of like white god-like thing. It sort of makes me wonder if this is, right? Like, what if the devil fruits were created as the sort, I think we've talked about this a little bit, as a sort of, as a weapon to pass down, or as like passing down. As we know, they carry a will down. They carry a will with them, and so there. And so, as you have these devil fruits that continue on, it's really like passing. It's really like another piece of the fight, right? And what we're seeing is the, you know, the, I guess, the Joy Boy faction. I won't necessarily call them the good guys. It obviously seems that way, but we see this, the Joy Boy faction now beginning to awaken their warriors to fight against the Elder Stars.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't even think Bonnie ate it, because Bonnie didn't eat a devil fruit. Even maybe all of that stuff is correct, right?
Yeah.
But she's a product of Saturn. So Saturn did experiments on Ginny,
right?
And then, I guess as a consequence of those, maybe he fed her a devil fruit while Bonnie was in utero, and he was doing some experiment, I guess, essentially to test whatever science theories he has. And that resulted in...
Look up the exact, like, how Bonnie got her powers. There's some specific language about it that I just want to remember.
Yeah, but yeah, she didn't eat a devil.
I think you're right. Yeah.
And the other thing I want to say in response is, I'm pretty sure we've been told that zone devil fruits have their own will, like the Nika Nika fruit, but I don't think we got that. I could be wrong. I don't think we got that for the Logias and for the Paramecias. So I say all of that to say it's a cool theory, but I don't think that applies in this situation.
So it sounds like there is a fruit, the Toshi Toshi no Mi, that exists, that explains her powers.
Okay.
But what I'm saying just initially is that it was because of those experiments by Saturn.
What does Toshi Toshi stand for?
Year.
Year, so year.
Like age, right?
Is that different from a Shinobu's fruit? Is that the fruit that Shinobu has?
Shinobu is Juku, which is like ripe, right? Kind of.
Gotcha. Okay.
Thank you, Abraham, for trusting my Japanese
knowledge. Yeah, you're welcome.
without any kind of qualification there. Just so we're clear.
I give you respect where it's earned.
Earned, as you know. I like that.
Yeah.
But I would say overall, interesting chapter. I think the potential for exactly what's going to happen out of this is cool. This now has me wondering if we're going to end up seeing like five different people look like Nika at some point at the end, or six looking fighting the Elder Stars.
That's what I mean. Nobody wants that.
I think you're right. Nobody.
Already think Luffy's fruit by itself is too broken.
Right. It's not that it's too broken. I don't think it's that it's too broken. I think it's that the way he got it was weak. And we've already gone over fixing Wano. We can go back to that at some point. We're not too far from eventually doing our updated arc rankings. But I think that's what we have for this section of the chapter. Come back next week for a discussion of chapter 1119. It's time that we're about to jump into awards show, where we give awards to noteworthy moments you might have missed. Abraham, what is your award this week?
So we've talked a lot about Drake these last couple of weeks, right? Like, not a lot, but we've talked about Drake for a couple of weeks.
Right.
And I don't know if you remember this. There was, like, on the Breakfast Club, Soulja Boy came on the show once.
Drake?
And he goes, he caught me my whole... He stole my whole...
Yeah.
So...
Okay.
I should give this the Soulja Boy Award or the Drake Award. I feel like if it's the Drake Award, I'm giving it to Bonnie. You know.
that means Luffy is Soulja Boy, though.
So that's my award for this week.
I like that, man. And it's crazy to me, dude. I was gonna say that you did not see that the Kendrick pop-up had happened. I know we talked about it before. Bro, I was listening to Bomani Jones talk about it. He was like, what you have to realize is that you don't reserve the forum in LA like a month before your concert. It's like Kendrick, now I'm just on this whole thing, but it's like Kendrick had this whole thing planned for months out because think about it, he has this concert. He doesn't have an album out. He doesn't have anything out. He had this concert. He had his whole thing planned so he could get to a concert just 2 days ago that's dedicated to insulting Drake and playing Not Like Us five times at the concert. So that's who Bonnie is, stealing the kind of guy who steals somebody's whole flow and then
What's your
sues
award
them like
for
French
this week?
Montana. Yeah, you know, I couldn't decide between two awards. I was originally going to give the cute but dumb award to Leo, who's still out here being incredibly gullible and thinking that Luffy is the one who killed Vegapunk. But I think in the end, I'm going to give the this would be really cool if you didn't have a goatee award to Sanji. Because as you all know, I believe that Sanji, the reason that Sanji is so much less cool in the second half of the series is because he has a goatee. In the first half of the series, he was this incredibly cool, suave cook. He would simp a little bit.
Mr. Prince.
Mr. Prince, exactly. He was out here doing some of this incognito espionage type stuff. And in the second half of the series, he does all these things that are kind of similar to what he would have done in the first half of the series. He still would have been chivalrous in that same way, but now he has a goatee. Like, look at this, look at this man's little mustache on the top of his. It's being a goatee guy is a decision, and Sanji is really not
I
rocking
mean,
it.
I feel. Look at it.
It's crazy.
Hey, you know,
Yeah.
as I was saying that, I saw him smile. I was like, yeah, both these guys have broken.
So I think we've talked about Samir a couple times on the pod. His wife thinks goatee should be illegal. I'm curious what your take is.
Here's what I want to say. When I did my Kinemon cosplay, I had to have a goatee. And I was like, honestly, no, I can't grow a mustache, to be clear. Who doesn't know what my face looks like? I can't really grow a
You
mustache. It's very
definitely
funny.
can. You have them.
No. You see, like, that's been
Yeah.
growing the same amount of time as this,
Okay.
like, big bushy beard that I have, right?
Okay.
I have not cut this at all, and it looks the exact same. Like,
Okay.
and, but so I had, like, just like a bottom goatee. And I was like, honestly, doesn't look too bad. So, but like, there's still something about, like, neither of you guys is running around being a really dramatic simp in this way that Sanji is, like being, you know, over the top with your
Yeah.
shiver. You know, you kind of
But
have him.
is it the goatee that causes him to simp, or is he a simp because he has a goatee? You know what I mean? What is it? It's like a chicken and the egg kind of thing.
No, it's that you can be a simp and you can, and it is not in any way correlated with whether you have a goatee.
Gotcha.
It's that if you act like that
You can't have
and
one.
you can if you act like that with a goatee, like, you're in trouble. So if you all were acting like this, right? Like if every time
Yeah.
Stussy, is that being a vampire?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But if
Because
you
you
guys, yes, but if you guys were saying that exact kind of
don't
thing,
have
but
one.
you said that with a goatee, now the show's in trouble. Now the show's in
That's
trouble.
wild. Oh man.
Abraham, what's your prediction for next week?
I have a safe prediction and a braver prediction.
Okay.
Which one do you want?
Well, I want both, but
Okay.
let's
So
start with the safe prediction, and I want to get to the
the
brave one.
safe one is that Bonnie in this new form is gonna lay the smackdown on Mara's his next chapter.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, that's safe.
I think the slightly bolder one is that she actually does it to Saturn. I think with Saturn, and hear me out, Saturn, I'm like, this is on a ship. I don't know how Saturn's gonna get to this ship. That's why I think it's a lot less likely. But I think it would be really cathartic for Bonnie to be able to. We already saw Kuma get his punch in on Saturn at the, beginning of the incident. For Bonnie to also be able to kind of get her you know, revenge a little bit against him, I think would be a cool moment.
Bro, how are you going to introduce that as a safe one and a brave one? And the safe one, she beats up one of the elder stars. Yeah, and the brave one, she beats up a different one of the elder stars. Say something crazy, right? Like, I like saying my crazy theories out loud, and I thought you were gonna do that for a second.
Emphasis on the word slightly.
I'll say this. I think I would like the Bonnie. You know, I think seeing one of the Elder Stars get defeated would be really interesting, especially if it's just one, and then you see the other four of them with him come together.
Yeah.
Maybe we learn something about this whole split consciousness, Voldemort, maybe not Voldemort type of thing that's going on.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of thing that I could see her defeating what one if of them.
They punch Mars into the ocean and he can't swim, and we're like, oh. The powers are related to devil fruits or something. If they do that and he's fine.
Yeah, or if they do that and he doesn't, and maybe it's not related, but it's just kind of like similar. Yeah, I would love all of those kinds of things. Yeah. Certainly, we saw Luffy was able to kind of handle one of them at some level. So if she is actually strong enough, we could really see one of the Elder Stars getting defeated. I think that would be interesting. And hey, who knows? Maybe beyond the big reveal that obviously got across the world, one of the Elder Stars getting defeated in this way could be interesting.
What's your prediction?
Well, you know, I'll just continue on with what you're saying as far as one of the Elder Stars getting defeated. Imagine a triad between Luffy. I'll call him like Lika.
Lika.
Luffy, Bonnie, and the giant robot, who I'm still all in on this thing coming back. You know, we've seen all these allies of Joy Boy be like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Where are you? At the end of this chapter, it's not just that we see the robot say, there you are, because you remember early in the chapter, early in this arc, it was once the robot sensed Joy Boy that it started moving and started becoming animated, but we see it go chick, 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 chick. So now I know it's very, which is a sign of like it's beginning to move. I know it's a little bit far under the ocean. It's going to be very difficult for something to swim from that far under the sea. But listen, man, we can work that whole part out. It's one piece.
Yeah.
And I think that robot is going to come and be part of the fight that ends up happening. Okay. Maybe all these allies of Joe, but have some kind of like particular ability to beat the Elder Stars. I don't know. The robots, the Zunisha, et cetera.
Yeah. All right.
Really quickly, I'm curious what you guys think about the Gorose. Do you think they're going to chase anybody down, or are they just retreating to Rejoie after this whole incident?
Well, yeah, it did say like Mars. Yeah, Mars did say that none of them are going to leave here alive. So it does feel like they're trying to eliminate them. But I feel like if they actually tried to chase us, we would never get a second to actually like introduce for what will presumably, you know, all signs indicate that it's going to be Elbaf. We would never get a second to reset a little bit. It would just become a continuation of the same arc feeling. Yeah. And I think that would end up being really narratively boring.
I also think that this incident is very intentionally self-contained on an island with no citizens, right?
Hmm.
That like nobody knows that the Gorosei have these demonic things, right?
Hmm.
So if all of a sudden you go to another island like Elbaf, especially if Shanks happens to be there, because that's a whole nother person that, you know, and crew that you're going to have to fight. You just risk revealing too much about the world government to the population as a whole, right? So I kind of expect Mars to maybe try and make a play for Atlas. Maybe Mars actually does get Atlas and retreats, but I don't expect Mars to be pursuing them until the next island.
Yeah, it'll be really difficult to continue on with.
All right. Well, it's time for us to continue our One Piece crew draft, where we're competing to create the best group of five pirates that can find the One Piece. Alex, can you give us a refresher on the rules?
Yeah, sure thing. So each week we've been alternating between who gets to pick first. Each pick must consist of a pirate and a canon crew that they were a part of. You're not allowed to select any pirates who have been to Laugh-Tail. And once a crew has been named, it is off limits for the rest of the draft. So far, Abraham has picked up Robin from the Straw Hats and Mihawk from Cross Guild. Jordan's got Shanks from the Red Hair Pirates and Whitebeard from his own pirates, the Whitebeard Pirates. And this week, Abraham, you're up first.
Yeah.
Who you got?
Yeah. So I had planned this out already. I already know who my five crewmates are going to be, I'll be honest. Like, because I have backups for my, like, I already, been planned out. And today, I was choosing between two characters. It's either going to be Katakuri or Big Mom.
Okay.
Now, the reason for that is I personally think one of the most integral things that you need to get to to Laugh-Tale, to find the One Piece, is someone who can interpret the poneglyphs.
Right.
We've seen Blackbeard go out of his way to attack Whole Cake Island to capture Pudding. We've seen Big Mom structure all of her plans around Pudding. We've seen all of these crews come after. The Straw Hats have been warned that people are going to be coming after Robin because of how necessary she is in order for crews to get to Laugh-Tale.
Right.
So I already have Robin, obviously, right? So I'm good on that.
Jank like this, bro.
I'm good on that. I don't need to worry about that. She's right on my crew. We know Odin can read the poneglyphs. Unfortunately, Odin has been to Laugh-Tale, so Odin's off the board. The only other canon character that we know has been a part of a pirate crew and that can interpret the poneglyphs is Pudding. And
I knew he was gonna be on some of this.
And so what I'm doing, so on top of this, I do need strength in my crew. So I'm taking Big Mom. I have another Emperor level crewmate on my crew. So between Mihawk and Big Mom, my strength is looking phenomenal. Robin, she's no slouch either on that front. And Pudding is blocked from the draft now. So I have no idea how Jordan's going to be getting to Laugh-Tale without anyone covering these morning.
Big Mom.
Yeah, you're good.
Man, it's funny because the one I swear to God, the person when I was just thinking about when I was joking before the show about who I might take, and I'm laughing myself. I was like, imagine if this took Smoothie. And I was like, because I want some thickness. I'm like, speaking of things you can't say if you have a goatee, I was like, if I did that, Abraham would be all like, you really gonna do that? And you're gonna ask. And you're gonna take it from the crew that you can't even get put in. I really want to be clear and say that I'm gonna tell you exactly how whatever crew I have is going to find the One Piece, and that's gonna be by running up on you and taking Nami by being that much stronger than you, to be clear.
You're going to be running up on Mihawk and Big... Mihawk's cutting your ship down before you can even come.
Bro, Shiro Hige, bro. Bro, you got red hair, bro. Go, Akagami, bro.
Go, make your pick. Bro. Make your pick.
Hold on, wait.
I've got Big Mom and Mihawk.
Man, let's see. I almost got the rules wrong. I'm between two people, and then I realized I can't take dragons, so...
Yes.
All right, man, listen. Check me out. Boa Hancock.
That's fine.
It
wasn't on my radar.
We know she can cooperate. We know she's an over a billion character. We know she had that Conqueror's Haki when she was a kid, but she's able to get along with people. She did. She had Conqueror's Haki.
Sure. I agree. I'm not fighting you on
we
that.
We know she had that bounty originally. Now, is she going to be able to get along with men? That might be very difficult, but she definitely
needs. And Rayleigh, who literally freed her from slavery.
Yay, she got on. Hold on, she got on with Rayleigh, so that means that they were cool. she also cooperated with she also did show up with the government in some amount of cooperation. If it wasn't for the fact that Luffy was there,
they had her whole island hostage. Essentially, they're like, "You're going to lose your status as a warlord if you don't participate." And you know that was the point, right? She didn't want to participate,
but she's on the crew now. Like it doesn't like she's on the crew. It's not
function.
It's not a question of whether or not she is. It's not a question of whether or not she is the pirate empress who has this whole responsibility to a giant island.
Yeah.
She's on my crew. Here's what I'm gonna say. I think we have people who have they're incredibly strong, but this is not Big Mom, Kaido, And I mean, whoever else was in the rocks? Who else was in the rocks?
Big Mom, Kaido, Whitebeard,
Stussy.
Rocks, Shiki, all of them. Yeah.
Right. Though Shiki was what?
Shiki was on
the rocks. Oh, man. That's what, and we don't even know anything about the personality of Rock, but it seems like he could have been definitely been some kind of madman. The characters that we're looking at are ones that I feel like would have the capacity to collaborate if they were actually working towards a greater goal. And incidentally, strong AF.
I don't disagree with that last point. Your crew is strong AF. But what I'm saying is, one, Bo is not going to be working with these guys. Two, I really don't know how you're going to get off the island. Like, you guys are going to run into a storm one day and the whole ship is just going to sink.
Hey, we'll see.
We'll see. I feel pretty great about my crew so far.
We'll figure it out. All I know is we're going to run up on you. And when we run up on you, it's going to be some issues for the, it's going to be some issues for the Ogbalase. Ogbalase Zoku. Okay. All right, so that's what we have for this week's chapter. Make sure you come back next week to hear more about 1118. Now it's time for the culture segment. Alex, what do we got this week?
Yeah, so I think we've all squashed a conversation about a new manga chapter when we're hanging out with that one friend who's not caught up yet. But according to research, spoilers can improve viewing or reading experience. One study out of the University of California found that knowing the purpose of the overall narrative helps you better incorporate all the details and plot points, allowing you to enjoy it more. Abraham, you've got an example of someone spoiling a story for themselves that's got you up in arms. What's happening there?
So recently I decided to rewatch some of Attack on Titan, and just fair warning, there will be some season one spoilers in here if you are freaking 15 years behind the times. But my roommate David walked in as Annie was about to be exposed as the female Titan at the end of season one. And he's just starting the show for the first time. So I was telling him, dude, don't look at the screen. There's going to be some crazy spoilers happening right now. And he has the audacity to tell me that he read the whole Wikipedia page for the series while he is watching the show. And I said, well, do you plan on not watching the show? Like, is like he said, because his response when he said that, I was like, why would you do that to yourself? Just watch the show. He's like, oh, nobody's got time for that. I said, so you're not watching the show anymore? He said, no, I'm still watching it, but, you know, at a slow pace. How enjoying the story when you know everything that's going to happen? I couldn't make any sense of it. But I want to swing it to you because you read the One Piece spoilers every week before the chapter comes out.
Right.
And then you read the chapter.
Right.
And I avoid reading the spoilers because I feel like it'll hinder my enjoyment of the chapter. So maybe you can kind of understand where David is coming from, but that doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, it's funny. Like, when you first suggested this topic, I was like, I would love to talk about this because my sister does the exact same thing.
It's crazy.
My sister, I don't know when the last time she went to a movie not having already read the plot of the entire movie, show, whatever. Honestly, like, she liked the One Piece live action, and that's how I'm trying to try. Now, she's, like, very normal, not, like, a nerd, whatever. But that's how I'm going to try and, like, get her to, like, get a little bit more into One Piece is by being, like, just check out the wiki. She'll be asking questions about, oh, is Garp this and that? I'm like, just check out the wiki. Maybe just, like, read more of the wiki and see if we can get her, like, all the way down the rabbit hole. Like, because One Piece wiki, like, for ages.
You start with One Piece, you're like, oh, this is like a fun story about pirates, and then you're like, no, this is like some dystopian universe commentary on like political systems.
Exactly, because I'm trying to get her to like get to the point where she's like, wait, like, hold on, this seems like fun and lighthearted, like, but like, you're saying that there's all these, like, you know, these celestial dragons doing what? Like, you said what? So it's all very interesting. So to me, I'll say I'm someone that does not particularly mind spoilers generally, and I would not say that I have never done this. Like, I'll say, you know, apologies, Joaquin, I've definitely read some of the What's Gonna Happen in The Last of Us. I've been watching, Joaquin's nagging me to watch The Last of Us right now at my request, and I've definitely read some of it. I think if a story is well told, it is not just knowing it or not knowing what's going to happen that is actually going to affect your enjoyment. Yeah. Like, what's your favorite movie?
It's either between Shawshank Redemption. It's probably Shawshank Redemption.
That's honestly like a great example. I haven't seen that in years. But like, how many times have you watched that?
Three or four times.
And you know that at the end I mean, spoiler alert for Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah. The movie has literally been out since 1994.
Right. Yeah. Like,
the statute of limitations on spoilers has long passed.
And so, like, to me, it's like you could know that he's going to, at the end, have made his way out, and that the warden or whatever is going to pull up the poster. And then the third and fourth time you watch that movie, you could watch that movie again tomorrow, and I bet that you would still get hype watching him, like celebrate.
Sewer, basically.
Yeah. Crawl through a sewer and like celebrate his freedom in the rain. And so for me, it's not that I'm necessarily always looking for spoilers. I'm not like an intentional person about it. But when it comes to One Piece ones, to be honest, it's just that like I get to have more One Piece in my life this way. I get to have something, hint on like today, a little, you know, it's like I get a little but something, you know.
Let me say something, because I agree. I'm getting spoiled on something is not going to take away from my ability to enjoy the series entirely.
Right.
I had a big spoiler for JJK happen that I'm not going to talk about.
We all know what that one is. Yeah.
I happen to get spoiled. It doesn't take away my ability to enjoy like the Shibuya incident arc. Right.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
But so Breaking Bad is my favorite TV series. Sure, right. Yeah, I've rewatched it several times.
Right.
One thing that I always kind of wish is the awe/wonder, whatever you want to call it, when you're experiencing something for the first time.
Right.
I wish I could have that again. Because there are so many great scenes in the show, even in like One Piece, like when Ace gets, you know, that fist through his chest, when Robin says, I want to live. Like, there are all these great moments that I still love to rewatch, but nothing is ever going to recreate how I felt the first time seeing that. Right. I feel like by spoiling yourself, maybe not so much with the spoilers, like reading one, but reading a whole series and knowing how the whole thing is going to happen as you're at the beginning, to me just seems crazy. I don't understand the point of even watching the series at that.
I still think that the way the story is like, you can tell me there's going to be this moment where Nami's stabbing herself and Luffy puts his hand on her. And you know, I don't know anything. No, you don't know anything. No, I don't. Like, I don't. And like, when you reread that too, he actually doesn't know anything. Anytime she talked about it, he just like went off on it and was like, I don't care about any of that. So he actually literally did not know anything about Arlong Park. He was just like going there to like mess things up because he didn't like what Arlong did to Nami. And no matter how much I could have read that before, how much I could have known exactly how Arlong Park was going to play out, I don't think there's any way that I could not feel some kind of emotion reading that. Similar kind of thing with Ace. I think the experience of turning the pages there, even if you know it's going to happen, it's like when I reread that, I can almost believe that it's not going to happen
because
everything is going in the other direction. Yeah. Even that chapter, which is named is Whitebeard.
They were like literally about to leave.
They want,
and then the chapter just ends like that, and that was one of the true like jaw dropping moments for me. And you think you can?
Know that that's going to happen, like even knowing it's going to happen, the experience of turning the pages and the way that it's set up is a very like that's the way that that story is told. And however you read that in Wikipedia on a summary of whatever it was, is not going to be the same as actually like turning the page from like incredible, happy, whatever, to seeing a tiny little Luffy reaching for the Viva card, to you turn the page and it's like full two-page spread with a giant fist through Ace's heart and Luffy sitting there standing there.
Yeah.
Hey, no matter how many times I might have read whatever beforehand, when a story is told well, just like those are, it's still gonna hit.
Well, that's fair. I still think it's crazy for David to do that. But you know, look, you know, like as long as you're not going out of your way to try and spoil things for me, I'm whatever, you do you. Enjoy the series however you want to enjoy.
I'm not saying I do that generally myself either, but you know, I don't think it affects the enjoyment. And I would love another time to talk about how much I hate people who are like so anti-spoiler that they're just like, shut up, don't say anything. I hate it so much. So I want to be clear that I like find those people really annoying, and I would love to talk more about that another time.
Yeah.
But I think that's, again, a conversation for another time. Alex, what's next?
Willie Mays, the greatest giant of all and one of the greatest baseball players ever.
Yeah.
MLB.com wrote that part, to be clear.
But yeah, Willie Mays did die on Tuesday at the age of 93. The thoughts of many around baseball were on Mays this week. Even Barack Obama posted on Twitter to call him a wonderfully warm and generous person and an inspiration to an entire generation. This past Thursday, the Cardinals and Giants played a baseball game at Rickwood Field in Birmingham, Alabama, as Old Negro League Stadium, where Mays began his career with the Birmingham Black Barons. This game was being played there as a celebration of the Negro Leagues and the long overdue decision by Major League Baseball to count the Negro League statistics in their official MLB records, recognizing the Negro Leagues as an equal league. While the game was designed to be a celebration of Willie Mays and his peers, it instead served as a remembrance of the all-time great. Jordan, you're the one who brought this. I know, Abraham, you're not much of a baseball fan, but I think, you know, he's a pretty monumental figure. So I'll let you jump on and tell us a little bit more about his history.
Yeah, man. Well, for me, it's difficult, especially, you know, I know you're Canadian, grew up in Canada. It's difficult to really talk about exactly how big baseball was in the culture when we were growing up, especially growing up in Springfield, Illinois, which is between Springfield, which is between St. Louis and Chicago. And one of the biggest things happening in the late, I think it was late 90s, early 2000s, at the height of Major League Baseball steroid era, was the home run race, the race between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa.
Yep.
Exactly. It was one in Chicago, one in St. Louis. I was living in a city that was like dead in between the two, right? The numbers in baseball were like one of the most sacred things that you would always know. When Mark McGwire hit his 500th home run, my mom bought me a newspaper that actually had the pitch, and on the back of it was all of the numbers of the top home run hitters of all time. You know, Hank Aaron, 755, Babe Ruth, 714. And at that point, third on the list, I'm pretty sure, was Willie Mays at 660. For someone who is
this, that's without including the Negro League stats, right?
That's well, actually, so Willie Mays only played 1 year in the Negro League. Okay. Didn't hit any home runs in that year.
Okay.
And Hank Aaron, I don't think he had extra numbers that came from the Negro League. It would have been sick if Hank Aaron passed Barry Bonds by adding league numbers. But yeah, that was the number that was on there, and so someone like Willie Mays is one of the truly like inspiring. From the point of being like a black kid who loved baseball, I think when someone like Obama talks about it, as someone who probably just like grew up hearing the stories much more, maybe even watched them when he was a kid, given his age, is one of the early players to actually play in the MLB and ended up being certainly one of, if not the greatest of all time. And there's certainly an argument for it.
Yeah.
The one other story about Willie Mays that I just want to tell, because I know you're not a baseball fan,
yeah,
but probably his most famous play, one of the things about him that's really significant is he wasn't just an amazing hitter who has all these numbers, but he was known for just like being an incredible athlete and one of the best fielders of that era as well.
What position did he play?
He was a center fielder, and his iconic play, which is called the catch, it was a I wish I remember the situation for it. You know, I think it could have been a playoff game or something like that, but someone hit like a deep ball way, way, way out the center field. And the center fields were like really deep.
Yep.
back in this era of baseball. And Willie Mays like turns around, runs, you know, basically all out and like makes an over the shoulder catch, manages to actually, you know, his hat falls off and he manages to actually like throw the ball in to like stop the runner from advancing who thought he was going to be able to score, basically.
Yeah.
You got to get back and you got to get back, tag up. And just as a kid, it's not like when baseball had the cultural importance that it did back when I was a kid, when it was bigger than football by a lot, bigger than basketball by like, you know, freaking forever. Just reading the books about these guys and stories about these guys, they really truly felt larger than life in a way that almost no one feels today, you know, like kind of Jordan-esque in a way, right? And so that's why to me it feels despite not him not being a player that I've watched, I feel really, you know, sad and moved that he's passed on.
Yeah, so like you said, I don't really watch baseball, but I am just a sports junkie in general. So I obviously knew who Willie Mays was. I'd heard the name. I knew he was one of the all-time greats. And what I didn't know until, I guess, this past week when he passed is, I guess, what you just described, right? How much maybe he served as a cultural icon. Because to me, I think of someone like, in terms of sports figures who serve as those kind of iconic, someone like Muhammad Ali is a character who transcends sports, right? And for him, it was a lot of civil rights stuff and political agendas and whatnot, right, that he fought for. He's actually someone that I try and live parts of my life modeled around how he lived his life. I don't know nearly enough about Willie Mays to say anything like that about him, but I think what you're describing, the kind of effect that he had on your childhood, is similar to how I think about Muhammad Ali. So, you know, we lost a great one, and pay our respects to Willie. But I do have a question for you. And again, this is just a question because I'm not really a baseball guy, but I know that you Barry Bonds played for the San Francisco Giants as well. And you said, you, I guess in the read, you know, that you gave to Alex, you mentioned that Willie Mays is the greatest Giant of all time.
Yes.
And I know that to a lot of people, Barry Bonds still holds that title. So what do you think is the argument for Barry Bonds, or not for Barry Bonds, for Willie Mays over Barry Bonds, given the kind of statistical dominance that he has? And I understand this happened in the steroid era, but he was like, what, like a 9 or 10 time Golden Glove winner? Like, Barry Bonds was an incredible fielder in addition to being an unbelievable athlete. And from all the stuff that I've heard, he was probably more so than anyone else in the league. Pitchers would avoid throwing to him. Like, he would go games where there would be like the bases would be loaded. Like, there would be a runner on first, second, and third base. And the team would be like, it's still better to walk Barry Bonds and give them a free run rather than throw at this guy just because he's that dominant of a hitter. So why do you think Willie Mays is a greater baseball player than Barry Bonds?
There are actually some really crazy like stats about how much they actually walked Barry Bonds. So it's like actually bananas. He had like a year with more intentional walks than strikeouts, which is absolutely crazy. I think that the part that, I guess the first thing that you mentioned as far as the steroid era is a part of this that we like can't just gloss over, right? When we talk about when Barry Bonds' best years were,
yeah,
basically they were all after the age of 35, right? From, I guess, from 34 on, right?
Okay. Because he
yeah, no, no, sorry, yeah, no, yeah, so I was wrong. It's after 35, actually. Okay. Yeah, from his year where he hit 73 home runs, yeah, like yeah, home yeah. run record.
Yeah,
how old do you think he was?
I mean, based off what you
yeah,
said,
yeah, 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 yeah. Right? 36. Yeah, 36. And so what you have is a dude who, instead of having what a normal player would have in terms of his, you know, regression as you age, he ended up just getting better and better and better and piling on stats that were made him a very different player from the player he was when he was young. That's one of the things you're talking about. Barry Bonds was like an incredible athlete when he was young. I think he actually has a 40 and 40 season, 40 home runs, 40 stolen bases, which is like an incredibly rare feat across all of Major League Baseball to have that combination of power and like speed and athleticism. But in the way he was able to actually stack up, when you talk about someone like Albert Pujols, a St. Louis great, you see he had a lot of really incredible years. He ended up being able to get to 700 home runs.
Yeah.
But over like that last like 5 or so years, it's like this dude, you know, from 35 on, this dude was not the same hitter. His batting average was way down. His number of home runs are way down.
Yeah.
And what you see with Bonds is he was just able to amass a certain number of stats.
Yeah.
In addition to that, when we talk about about some of these.
Can I ask a quick question just about the steroids?
Yeah.
What about the argument that pitchers were also on the juice as well at the same time?
That just,
like the pitchers that he was facing were on steroids.
Well, one is as far as like home run hitting, that actually, like if you're able, if you're someone who's like Barry Bonds and you're able to like hit harder, right? Like it just makes home runs easier. because the ball's
yeah.
coming faster. And obviously, if you pitch faster, it's like harder to actually hit the ball. But once again, we're talking about a period when you should be in athletic decline.
Sure.
Right. It's not like, yes, the pitchers were like pitching harder, but he should not have been able to keep up with whatever was going on. Even the pitchers who were not on the juice, he should have still declined from like 35 to 40. Okay. Instead, at 39, he's hitting like 45 home runs, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that's worth mentioning, I know you've like asked kind of about how you compare across eras.
Yeah.
And one thing about baseball is there's a stat called wins above replacement that is actually like a pretty good measure of that. That actually does kind of allow us decently to say who's better, like across different eras. Now, Barry Bonds is one spot ahead of Willie Mays in the all-time list. I'll say that, right? Again, a lot of his wins above replacement were coming in a period when he should have been in athletic decline. Whereas, like most of like Willie Mays, most players will have the large majority of theirs certainly before 35. But number one is Babe Ruth, who's like ahead of everyone by like 16 wins above replacement, and then Barry Bonds and Willie Mays are like both there, but being a clean player, whether or not everyone else was necessarily like, obviously other people were doing drugs, but being a clean player really matters for this. And also when you talk about the numbers and how sacred they were, like you haven't really been in America at a time where like the baseball numbers really meant something. And what sucks is that Barry Bonds is part of the group of people who ruined all that.
But I do want to say like Barry Bonds has steroids, but Babe Ruth played in a segregated league. Right, he played in like the dead ball era. Like that's so. I understand why you're saying that his numbers need to be taken with a grain of salt, but I feel like you can make that argument for like that kind of argument for a lot of different players.
The way wins above replacement works is it's not a stat that's like it's not like if you were talking about number of home runs, batting average or whatever, that would be accurate. Wins above replacement is basically about trying to take who the median player is and how much better or
worse. But a lot of the best players weren't allowed in the MLB is what I'm saying.
Oh, right? Okay. Like, you're better than Nero.
Yeah.
All I can say is that's a fair point. We got the Negro League stats now incorporated in the MLB stats. It's kind of how I
feel about basketball in the 70s. Like,
yeah.
Dominated in the 70s, but the ABA existed. So you had guys like Dr. J and George Gervin who weren't even in the league. So I kind of take some of those, like some of the stuff that happened during that era in the NBA was kind of a grain of salt because you had the talent pool was diluted by the fact that you had two separate leagues at the same time.
I'm willing to give you that's definitely possible, but certainly I'm not going to go to Barry Bonds.
I'm going to Willie Mays. Because Willie Mays, that wouldn't apply to him. That would apply to Barry.
Exactly. And I'm going on, and I was online earlier. I'm just looking at him up again now. There's a lot of articles about, you know, MLB.com, Willie Mays, baseball GOAT. Willie Mays' case, CBSSports.com, is baseball's GOAT. MSN.com, the case for Willie Mays is baseball's GOAT. So there's really a lot, you know, AL.com, I don't even know what the mess that is, but it's another one saying the case for Willie Mays, the greatest baseball player who ever lived. So I think that's honestly like a really, I think that's a really strong argument. And I think I'm still going to go to Willie Mays and not Barry Bonds.
That's fair.
Anyway, thanks for humoring me with that conversation, Abraham. I know it's big news, and I appreciate you coming on with that. That's all we have for time, everyone. Thank you to Alex, your friend who produced this podcast, for helping out behind the scenes. And come back next Sunday to hear what we've got to say about chapter 1119. I think that's about the third time I said that in this show. In the meantime, we are your friends who read One Piece. Help us get more friends by liking, rating, and reviewing us wherever you get your podcasts. Check us on YouTube at Friends Who Read One Piece, and we're on Twitter now at DuffWROP. Pod. Thanks for listening. Peace.
Appreciate y'all.